Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Vic Bhagat to the broadcast. Vic is CIO for GE's Global Growth and Operations Organization, where he's responsible for leading IT and delivering process excellence, simplification, collaboration, security, and compliance in all non-US markets, with particular emphasis on high-growth markets such as China, India, the Middle East, and Brazil. Vic is currently based in Hong Kong. Prior to his current role, Vic served as CIO for GE Corporate and GE's Advanced Manufacturing and Software Technology Center. Vic has also served as CIO for GE in India and Southeast Asia, where he was responsible for driving the company's regional strategy in sourcing, IT, and the global development centers. He's also held a series of leadership roles in the areas of information management, e-business, and corporate security across several GE businesses, including GE Aviation, GE Consumer and Industrial, and GE Plastics. Prior to joining GE, Vic held IT positions with Keen, Humana, and Colgate-Palmolive. Vic earned his bachelor's degree in information management and marketing from the University of Louisville, and also has a degree in physics and mathematics from St. John's University in India. I recently caught up with Vic at GE's headquarters in Fairfield, Connecticut, as he was preparing to assume his new role, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as Vic talked about the methods he'll use to cultivate innovative ideas from across the geographies within his purview, how he'll spur greater collaboration at the same time, as well as some other topics. Vic Bhagat, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Peter, I'm delighted to be part of this thing. I think this is going to be a great session, and thank you for inviting me.
It's my pleasure. Vic, you're in the process of transitioning roles, and I wonder if you could speak a bit about the role that you're relinquishing as well as the one you're about to take on.
Yeah. No, absolutely. The role that I'm moving away from, which I've been doing for the last 6 years, was in the old way, if I were to define it, I ran a traditional shared services capability across GE. Anything that cut across GE was part of my shop. And in addition to that, I was also running the Michigan Technology Center, where we are aggressively hiring about 1,100 to 1,200 IT professionals. It's just been a phenomenal journey. And then about 3-4 months ago, I was tapped and asked to take on a new role, which is a global CIO role based out of Hong Kong. And it ties in very nicely to what my previous role was, which was, supporting all of GE. Now, understanding what the needs are, from that perspective, from a tactical perspective, my new role is to enable growth in the global markets. And what does IT really need to deliver to enable the businesses to grow? I think it was a really nice handshake. And I'm going to continue to leverage my existing team as well as build a very robust environment and team out in the global arena.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Vic, GE, any of our listeners would be familiar with, is as complex an organization as there is. And in the role that you're taking on, how will you facilitate collaboration and standardization across the globe while also taking into account the unique facets of the different businesses and different geographies that will be under your purview?
Yeah. Peter, great question. And as we look at GE, we do business in over 100 plus countries. How do we really communicate with each other, right? So we're not developing silo operations in each country. How do we really leverage the power of General Electric Company to accelerate our growth, right? So we're not reinventing. So collaboration is absolutely going to be critical. It's actually going to be the fulcrum of our activities. How do we share best practices? And this is something that GE does so phenomenally well. We run like a conglomerate, but we are a very small company of 320 plus thousand people, okay? And we continuously talk to each other. We have tools in place that we share best practices. We have an ability to share our solutions that we have established in Brazil that can be leveraged in India or in Germany, right? How do we really do that? So I think part of my responsibility in this new role is going to make sure that I facilitate that seamless communication. What sort of a tools can I bring in? But we can't have the tools drive the outcome. We have to first define the process. How do we do that? Who's the best in class? And then bring in the right tools to enable that process. So with that, we also have to, stay focused on a standardized approach. You know, as I previously talked about, you know, if we keep operating in a silo, you know, we're really not going to connect with each other. But if we start standardizing, you know, as I mentioned in my previous role, I looked at processes that cut across GE. So if we're doing payroll, why should every business have their own payroll? Yes, there are nuances for certain countries and certain regions and all that. We can understand that. We can address those nuances and differences. But things that cut across GE, things that cut across that are best practices, we ought to be able to leverage that. So standardization is going to be a key. And I think collaboration is central to making this job successful.
That's great. And I know a big part of both your old role as well as your new one is centered around innovation. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the role that innovation plays. Yeah. Innovation is, for me, a lot of people will say, is part inspiration, but I know that you also believe that there are processes that can enable innovation to a great extent. Yeah. Can you talk a bit about your perspective there?
I think you're hitting on some really critical points of how IT should really play a role in a business. Sometimes I look at IT and I try to define, instead of saying information technology, I talk about innovative technology. IT has to be front and center in finding out what are the innovative capabilities that we can develop for our businesses. How do we contemporize our use of information that it speeds up decision-making process for our business leaders? That's what we got to start looking at. Back in the days, we always used to look at, and we were very reactive. We looked at information, we analyzed it, and then we got into a more of a active resolution. We have to figure out, how do we get into a predictive model? How do we take a lot of this information that's available and analyze it and provide the right capabilities to our customers, to our business decision makers, so we cut down the cycle time that it takes to make a decision? So for example, if you look at an ITO process, right, which is an inquiry to order, from a first time that a customer inquires about your product, what is the cycle time that it takes that inquiry will turn into an order? And how do you cut down that cycle time? IT has an enormous role in that. How do you make that information available to your customer right then and there so the customer goes, wow, this is the product I want? And instead of taking 10 days to decide whether they want to buy their product, they come back and say, I want it. Let's place the order. So now suddenly you've taken your entire ITO off 10 days and you squeezed it down to 2 hours. Think about the return your business gets. But the mindset that's required to innovate those processes, to innovate the capabilities, to innovate how that information is going to flow about your product to the customer, IT is the engineering behind it. That's why I think it's extremely critical for IT to think ahead of itself rather than be in a reactionary mode.
That's fantastic. Given this sort of an imperative, what sort of people are you looking to be part of the team to facilitate that? And actually, I guess part of the question would also be, are there dedicated staff who are in charge of innovation? Is it the responsibility of a broader portion of the staff? How do you think about that?
Again, we can talk about innovation till we're blue in the face, right? We can come up with all kinds of examples and say we could innovate this, we could Innovation actually starts with the people that you bring in on board. There's no set formula, but you have to encourage people, you have to reward people, you have to make sure that you are leveraging their mindset and their creativity. And you have to change the environment of where you are working and the playground that you create, where people are excited about working. So if you create an environment where people get up in the morning and say, you know what, I'm doing some great stuff, they're going to be excited about getting up from bed and coming into work. But if you create an environment where they are either being punished or they're being, you know, just said, hey, you got to keep fixing this, keep putting Band-Aids, they're not going to be as excited. So the first and foremost thing is, what environment do you create? Then the right people that you got to bring in, do you respect their ideas? Mm-hmm. Regardless of what their ideas are, do you respect them? Do you encourage them to come up with ideas? Do you encourage them to challenge status quo? Or do you just talk about it? Do you practice that? And I think it takes an enormous leadership, enormous capability from your mind to have somebody tell you that you are wrong. Do you have the humility to listen to other people? I think it's a combination of a lot of this stuff. It's not about can I just find somebody who's got enormous masters and a PhD and suddenly I can put innovation and they're from a top school. I could get somebody with a bachelor's degree who's got 10 years of experience and who's willing to give me feedback on how I can make things better in my organization, but am I willing to listen? Am I willing to explore that idea? So I think it's key ingredient in the leadership style of how you foster innovation. Innovation is not something that you can just buy. right? Because then you're buying somebody else's idea. Innovation is something that you have to grow within the organization. You have to create an environment where people get excited about it and people will want to come join you where you don't have to really go and look for them.
And that's interesting. As you recapitulate a little bit, it sounds like culture is really a defining hallmark in terms of innovation. You need to first commit to an innovative culture, and then that becomes the petri dish through which these people can have the right sort of environment to develop new ideas.
No, you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Unless you build that culture, innovation, people are not going to be desirous of coming in with ideas, right? They're going to feel that they're going to be set down. So you have to create the culture. You're absolutely right. Once you have that environment, once you have created that engine, you're going to be amazed with the thought process that's going to come. The human mind is just incredible. Mm-hmm. You innovate the mindset. You don't try to innovate the factories. That's what you got to do.
Yes. Right? And so, again, given the global reach of your new role, I'm curious how GE and how you in your role think about drawing ideas from one region, from one area of the organization, and then spreading them more broadly. Is there a means by which new ideas that have a broader impact potentially than their original source are thought through?
Yeah. You're actually doing my appraisal now, because that's what I'm going to be appraised on, you know.
I see.
And what kind of a culture am I going to build? That do I have the right pipeline of exchanging of these ideas? You know, if things are happening great in Germany, can I take those best practices and apply them somewhere in Indonesia, right? Or do I have to rebuild something in Indonesia or something? You know, so I think that's where my leadership is going to be tested. I mean, we have great talent. In this company. How do we leverage that talent to accelerate a region that they're not familiar with? How do we do that? How do we get people to make big decisions in that region rather than all the decisions are being made in the U.S.?
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And I suppose it speaks volumes that you are moving to Hong Kong, that this is there's going to be these conversations that are happening outside of the U.S.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the decisions have to be localized. You can't have a salesperson sitting in Connecticut telling you how to sell something in India.
Good point.
Right?
Yeah.
So those are the things. You have to localize the decision. You have to empower the folks and giving them the right information so they can actually help accelerate your sales process in the localized market. And that's where I have to be extremely diligent about that I am putting the right processes and right enablement of those decisions for the folks to act upon and deliver results.
That's great. That's really great. Yeah. I want to talk about the other side of the typical CIO role, the topics like security and risk management and just ensuring that you're managing all of these things, given the amount of newness that naturally results from innovation, so much excitement that brings about. There's obviously the potential risk of that newness of making sure that it's complying to standards, making sure that it is delivered securely and so on. How do you think about those things, balance?
I think, Peter, you've touched on a nerve that I think is near and dear to every IT professional. I think as we have all seen, right, what happened in the past in the financial industry and all that stuff, I think regulation is here to stay, right? They're going to be in our knickers whether we like it or not, okay? And we really have to be diligent about how do we protect our intellectual property, and as well as how are we going to interact with the regulatory board, regardless where we are. I mean, you can talk about the Works Council in Europe. You can talk about what's happening in Asia, where all the governments, we just recently read about that India was going to kick out the BlackBerry because of, the encryption keys were not being given to the government. I think a lot of these governments are going to get involved now because of the information flow of how it happens. And we as a company have to figure out how do we protect our assets, our information assets, right, our IP. So I think it's going to be extremely important for every IT professional or actually an IT leader to be sensitive and aware of security, governance, and controllership, right? This is going to be front and center in everything that we do. There are going to be significant challenges in the U.S., as we have already seen, in the banking, in the financial industry, in the healthcare industry, in the places where we do business, aviation, energy, especially things that are happening in Japan right now, the landscape changing for nuclear energy, right? Everything is, so the whole world is changing. So how do we really protect our information? How do we make sure that we are compliant to the local laws and local regulations? And that is something, as we deal with information, it's going to be part of our responsibility. It's going to be on our tray, right? Whether we like it or not. So we have to be extremely astute and we have to be forward thinking about this rather than having these things catch us by surprise. because it's not going to catch IT by surprise. It's going to catch the business by surprise. And our business leaders are not going to be appreciative that we are not front and center of this thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, good points. And does that also suggest the need for a federation in terms of the model, having people on your team, as well as in the business for that matter, who understand each of the geographies in which you operate and kind of boiling that up to your level, for instance?
Yeah, we, in GE, the way we run it is we have our chief risk and governance leader, Larry Biagini, who runs it. And I have to make sure that I coordinate with him. So as I hire people that are local in these regions, they have to make sure that they are well connected with Larry's organization, because I don't want to create a separate organization that's outside, that's completely disconnected with what's happening from a GE's global perspective. And this is going to be, you know, when I look at it, and I sometimes wonder that how we're going to do this thing, this is going to be like a four-dimensional matrix of our connection. Who's writing my appraisal and who's paying me, and, you know, all of that stuff has to be addressed. And people have to understand that this is about General Electric Company. This is not about one individual. This is not about one country, right? But our customers need to make sure that they are the number one customer of General Electric Company. So this is where you have to really enable it, because the customer comes first, but without sacrificing, you know, and I say it, without unyielding integrity. In that, I mean, it's such a simple word, but under that is your security, your governance, your compliance, your personal integrity, your company integrity. All of that is covered under it, right? And you have to be astute about it.
Going from global issues back to the U.S., I would like to talk a bit more about the operation in Michigan, which you helped stand up, of course. Now, obviously, a lot of organizations are building their teams abroad, are, you know, offshoring and even from U.S. operations, sending work abroad. I thought it was really interesting the level of commitment that the organization has made to Michigan and building a facility, building a rather large team out there. Can you talk a bit about why Michigan, why you chose to do that and the benefits you've garnered?
You know, the Michigan Tech Center has just been such a phenomenal success for us, you know, because if you really look back at time, about 15, 16 years ago, you know, we went with GE, you know, kind of architected the whole offshoring model. And anything in GE, if you don't measure, you don't do. So we even measured our outsourcing capability, and we drove it with dashboards, and we drove it with metrics. And it's worked phenomenally well. You know, for us, it's allowed us to save costs, drive productivity, and we were extremely focused on it. But over the course of the years, as technology has changed, Peter, what we have seen is that we also ended up outsourcing a lot of our IP. So our outsourced partners started telling us which technology to use, and we started losing a lot of that secret sauce. So what we have done with Michigan is we have been extremely surgical about the talent that we need to grow within our portfolio, our technology portfolio. And we wanted to really drive deep technical domain knowledge back into IT rather than just project management capability. Because what happened is people just became kind of the folks that were just managing projects without really understanding the technology stack that's behind that solution. So what we have done in Michigan right now is we've hired 600 people in the last 14, 15 months. We got about 90,000+ resumes. Right. So there's an enormous demand for people or enormous demand for the jobs that we created. So these were not your typical programming roles. These have been extremely vertical, deep domain expertise, like people in data architects, DBAs, Oracle skill set, SAP skill set, security skill set for people that are doing forensics, those kind of things, the people that are extremely familiar with advanced persistent threat capability, right? So those are the kind of talent that we're bringing in. And in average, the experience that we have is anywhere from 12 to 13 years of experience, averaging. So the span goes from about 7 years to 22 years of experience. So we've just been extremely lucky and as well as delighted about the talent that we have been able to get in Michigan. I think it's just been fantastic.
That's really wonderful. It's a great story to tell, certainly. As I hear you talk about through all the answers that we've to the questions that I've asked, I'd love to get your perspectives on what the IT leader and the IT staff of the future look like? So what sorts of skills do you see becoming more pronounced or more prominent versus some of those others? You mentioned, you know, they're not going to be the typical programmers. Yeah. I hear you saying those are kind of, in some ways, the not quite as high value as what they once were.
Yeah.
And we're talking more about innovation, of course, and,
right,
and
right.
A proximity to and an understanding of the business.
Yeah.
Can you talk a bit more about some of the things you see as the rising and skills that are going to only increase in prominence?
Yeah, I think not that the CIO role is going to change in the future. I think it's already changed. Mm-hmm. I think the businesses are demanding a lot more out of the CIO, right? They're looking at CIO as not the chief information officer, but practically in some businesses as a chief innovation officer. Is how are you really going to help me innovate my processes to help me drive, you know, more sales, more growth, more revenue? I mean, this is where a CIO finally has a seat at the table. You know, a information technology is no longer an afterthought, especially in cases of, you know, when you're doing an acquisition. You know, back in the days, it used to be, you know, the BD is decided, the HR is decided, you know, everybody's like, oh, by the way, don't you think we should bring IT in? You know, and let them, you know, get all the files and all that. I think those days are long gone. I think now businesses, as they're looking at any acquisitions or even divestitures, right, IT is front and center in playing a more of an offense rather than the defense. We're not an afterthought anymore. So the demands on a CIO or an IT leader is about, if not more, equivalent to a demand on any, you know, like an HR or a finance person or a business development person, right? And that's what I think business leaders now are demanding a lot more from an IT leadership versus just taking care of my servers, which is a given, right? Mm-hmm. Email's got to work, servers got to work. Because at the end of the day, you know, here's what happens, right? It doesn't matter whether the person gets paid every 2 weeks with zero errors on their paycheck, they get their insurance handled, they get their pension taken care of, everything happens. And it happens flawlessly every single day. But the day they open up their PC and they turn the PC on or their laptop on or device on, and it doesn't work. IT doesn't work.
That's right.
For them. Right? It's that's how IT is judged.
Right.
So the infrastructure is a given. We have to make sure that we are providing world-class capability on that. But on top of that now, the game has changed. The business leaders are looking for tomorrow's leaders. They're not looking for yesterday's news and yesterday's capabilities. Mm-hmm. They're looking for folks that are going to help them contemporize their capability to drive and enable and accelerate growth. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where an IT leader's mindset needs to be part.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned, of course, famously, GE is very metrics-driven. As you point out, that's no different for the IT department.
Yeah.
There are a lot of organizations, other Fortune 500 organizations, that have had challenges in introducing metrics to IT, a domain that has been less measured historically within other organizations. Is there an advantage in this culture, the fact that IT has, I imagine, been forced to operate for good reason to operate and adopt the practices of the business? Is that something?
No, I think rather than measuring IT on, you know, the number of server outages and number of email outages, which I believe should be a given uptime of 100%, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. IT should be measured in how are you really enabling business processes, right? How are you driving simplification? Because simplification will determine how contemporary you are. Are you leveraging the cloud capability? Are you leveraging virtualization capability? That's how you drive simplification. Do you have 10,000 applications? Doing what? Do you have applications out there that have been there that were built in 1970s that are still there, that are one person that's actually using that? I mean, those are the kind of things, right, that IT should be measured on. Security lapses, that's how you measure them. Collaborative capability on the enterprise, right? How quick is IT in sharing this information or enabling, you know, the business to share information within its own realm? When you start measuring IT with the business goals, you will see a significant change. But if you keep measuring IT on server outages and email outages, and we are always going to stay the traditional IT.
Mm-hmm. And it's also, if I understand you correctly, it's a proactive versus reactive mindset anyway.
Right.
Yes.
Right. How do you get to that point where, you know, the infrastructure that's given, what is your core competency? Make sure the infrastructure is up and running. Make sure you contemporize it. Make sure you have that capability so you can actually play the game where it's more fun. Right?
Point. Excellent. Speaking of fun and looking into your crystal ball, I'd be curious, from your perch, what sorts of trends particularly excite you as you look out to the future?
I think the capability of extending the IT solutions to anywhere, any place, any time is going to be critical. I think having us locked down to a particular mode of a device are gone. You know, if I were looking at it, I think feeling tethered to an office or a desk or a business center, I think those days are numbered. I think users and our constituents are going to demand connectivity any place, any time, the ability to get to information in a secure way, any place, any time, anywhere. And that's some of the challenges that we face, Peter, as, you know, in a global company like ours. You know, we are on 24 hours. I don't think there is a single IT person out there that can say that hasn't checked their BlackBerry or their email on the weekends. We are always checking it. We are always, you know, looking at it. We are always, you know, connected. But now you take it to the next step and saying, can I now do my work regardless how I am connected? And I think as we look at, you know, a lot of the IT innovative companies are going to come up with solutions. I think recently Motorola just launched a device that's a iPhone that you can dock into a laptop and it becomes into a laptop. And I think that's what's going to happen. Just think about it. You have your iPhone or your BlackBerry, you walk into your office, you just dock it and suddenly that becomes your PC. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, just that kind of flexibility is what's going to be demanded out of us, right? So that's on the mobile side. Mm-hmm. I think we are also going to be asked, we as an IT are going to be asked about hyperintelligence. And the hyperintelligence, you know, taking the whole decision support system and the analytics to a new level, where I think IT will have to start getting involved in and helping the customers better understand our product. And my simple question is, we all have laptops. And let's say the laptop has the capability of doing 100% amount of work, right? Out of the 100%, how much do you use it? You probably use it 30, 40% of the time. But if somebody educated you and say, Peter, here is how you could actually use another 60% of the laptop and it'll, you know, increase your output, wouldn't you be delighted about it, right?
Indeed.
So I think that's how now IT has to start looking at our product base, collecting that data and educating our customers about our products. Mm-hmm. And saying, here is how you can best use our product. Mm-hmm. Or here's how you've been using it, but here's how more you could use it. You know, a simple case, an MRI machine, right, at a hospital, right? And if you really look at it, it's actually used from, 8 a.m. till about 3 or 4 p.m. In India, the same machine is used from 2 a.m. till about 11 p.m. Why? It's the same machine. How come theirs has so much throughput? Mm-hmm. So suddenly we got to understand that. We got to educate somebody who's only been using it from 8 to 3. Why? Why can't you expand it? Is it the capability of the machine? Is it how you schedule it? Mm-hmm. Right? Providing that information and arming your customers with that information makes them appreciate your product more. So I think getting into that sort of hyper-intelligence capability, IT has an enormous role to play. Mm-hmm. And I think the other area we have to really, really contemporize ourselves, and I use this, you know, term quite often, is the whole user experience. When IT develops a solution or an application, it's like a hospital. You only want to go in there once, get the information, you're done with it. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you develop something that just delights the customer, delights the user? So you get stickiness on it. You change the way that a machine interacts with the human. The experience that a user will have with your application determines whether he or she is going to come back or not. Mm. So user experience is enormously powerful, right? So I think when I look at it, right, I think those are some of the areas where I do believe IT can play a significant amount of or a significant role, mm-hmm, in changing the game.
On that last one, I just want to one quick question there. So the extent to which the goal, rightfully so, is to delight customers, does that suggest to a greater degree prototyping ideas, involving customers in them as they're being developed?
Yeah, absolutely. There are different ways. I mean, you know, you could use the agile capability. Mm-hmm. You could use the traditional waterfall capability. Mm-hmm. You know, it just depends. How do you really delight your customers, mm-hmm, right? How do you give them instant gratification? How do you give them the capability that they want more? Mm-hmm. So it's more of a pull versus a push. Mm-hmm. So they're pulling in and saying, you know what, IT, I need you. versus, you know what, don't give me enough tools. This is just, you know, you put stuff out there that's just so difficult to decipher. Mm-hmm. I don't even know where to go to get the information.
Very good. Well, Vic Bhagat, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate you joining us on the Forum on World Class IT and sharing your very statistically significant observations given the perch that you operate from. Thank you so much for joining us.
Peter, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity. It's been great talking to you again.
Just listen to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information about these five principles and sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metisstrategy.com. And please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metisstrategy.com. Our editor is Chris Davis, and our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.